Accession number 30339, reel 2.
Down on the blankets like that, and it was a rat. Got in the bed. It was cold. We were cut off. It was so cold that when you were, whoever was on duty in the command post of spotters, every so often you had to traverse and elevate all the guns, keep the oil moving, and switch on all the electric equipment. Incidentally, in the command post was a telephonist in a dugout, and he had a direct phone line with fighter command. So everything was done through fighter command. As soon as you saw something, fighter command was told what number of aircraft, types of aircraft, and all that sort of thing. Yes, it was after that I was sent on a cookery course.
Just during that time, and I imagine, so we're talking about the winter of 39-40, you said it was quiet, but there were alerts. I mean, you did see enemy aircraft, you saw formations flying over.
Occasionally, yeah. Nothing much happened. That was a phony war. And then, when the Germans were after Dunkirk...
that's a considerable jump now, isn't it? We're going forward now to Dunkirk was 1941, wasn't it? 41.
Gone. Yeah, I forget that, because I haven't got...
I really shouldn't know that. It's a disgrace. Doesn't matter. Okay, no problems. Let me think. Dunkirk was the summer of 1940. This is appalling. I really should know. This should be one of those dates that's tattooed on my memory. Never mind. Anyway, after Dunkirk.
I remember what it was going on anyway. After Dunkirk, then there was the invasion scares.
This is Norman Dunn, Reel 2.
This was the build-up. We had to be on the alert for parachutists. We were told we would probably have to patrol the Essex marshes at night looking for paratroopers with pickaxe handles.
You weren't armed. You didn't have rifles.
Well, the only rifles we had were the 6 rifles for the guardroom. And their rifles obviously had to stay there. I thought to myself, well, if I'm sent out on one of these things, I'm not going to face a German with a Tommy gun and a pickaxe handle. I'm going to the cookhouse and get the carving knife. And I'll lie in wait. Anyway, that didn't happen. And every so often we'd get an alert when the wind was blowing from the continent. It'd wake you up at night to sleep with your respirators on, because they were afraid of gas attacks. We did an awful lot of gas drill with phosgene, lewisite, mustard gas, all those things. We did know about nerve gas then, but we hadn't got any way of combating it.
When you say you did drills with these gases, you didn't actually do drills with the gas, but you were told... How were the drills carried out?
Well... One of the ways of doing it was going through a gas chamber with tear gas. And you go in with a respirator on, and you'd be in there several minutes, and you could feel it stinging your skin. And then you were told to take it off. And 9 times out of 10, you had to kick the door down and get them to let you out. That was part of it. Also, we had various chemicals to detect mustard gas and all those sort of things. And we had plates, posts with paints that were painted with a special paint that was sensitive to various chemicals. And you had to keep watch, and there was a gong, which was usually a spent 3.7 cartridge case, and you could hammer it to give a warning for gas. And you had obviously have one of these football rattles as a warning. We also had gas capes. It was an oil skin cape. You had it rolled up, you respirator on the front, and you had the gas cape at the back here, on the back of your neck, and you had a string. You could just pull the string and it unrolled and you could slip it on. You also had a pot of paste to neutralise mustard gas, which was a paste, some sort of greasy paste with chloride of lime. It was chloride substance. That was supposed to neutralise mustard gas. Anyway, that was that.
Did you take? Well, this is the end of the Phoney War. This is post Dunkirk now. What was the atmosphere like in your group of men? The people you were you worried? Were you taking it for real? Were you getting bored to tears? Was it all a joke?
I think we were always kept very, very busy. The 59th 36th was one of these units that everything had to be polished, and anything that didn't move, you whitewashed, and if it moved, you shot it, sort of thing. And whenever we moved to somebody else's base, we usually spent a lot of time cleaning up. It was that kind of unit. So everybody was always kept very busy.
And that came from the officers in charge, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
And what,
tradition.
And what were they regular officers, or were they...
No, they were all TA. Yeah.
And they were presumably were retired, they had had regular service, and they were...
Yeah, I don't know, really. I know one of them, he was a captain. I know he was reputed to be a millionaire. He used to have food hampers come from Fortnum Mason. I didn't begrudge him that. No, that.
So it was a good-natured atmosphere.
Yes, yeah, very good-natured atmosphere. Except in the East, these were all East Enders. We were country boys from North Devon, and we were called the Swede Bashers. And they used to take the mickey out of us a bit because they thought we were slow-witted because we didn't rise to the bait. Anyway, we were able to show them we were just as good, if not better, than they were on the guns.
Did you ever have fights? With
no, no.
No fisticuffs, no.
No.
You never got
no,
to that?
No, no, no. They were very good.
So now, well, let's say that we're post-Dunkirk, which is, say, the end of 1940. I mean, I think we're getting over my senior moment, forgetting when Dunkirk was. What was the... You knew what had happened at Dunkirk. You know that the situation...
Yes, we could hear it happening.
Tell me about that.
Well, we could hear distant rumbles. We don't know whether it was mines being exploded at sea or which it was. And on Canby Island, which is virtually a mud flat, or was a mud flat, the ground used to shake.
But, I mean, Dunkirk...
It was worrying.
It's a long way from Canby Island, Dunkirk.
Yes.
But that must have been naval gunnery, I suppose.
Could be, yeah. Anyway, you were certainly thinking about them and worrying about them. You didn't shut it out. Anyway, after Dunkirk, then the build-up to the German invasion... Then the mass day raid started. This is when they decided they're going to knock out our air force.
Do you have any idea of the dates? This is which is this the summer?
No, it was the summer
of 1941.
Yeah,
presumably.
Yes, I think so.
Battle of Britain.
Yeah, Battle of Britain. The first day, it was overcast. We couldn't see a damn thing. At this stage, we hadn't got radar, and.
Do you need to sort the dog?
Is the boys coming home from school, is it?
It's 3 o'clock.
Nobody at the door. Anyway, the first day, 300 plus German bombers. We couldn't see them, but the roar was terrific. They came straight up the estuary, and we sat there, we couldn't fire a shot. That's the day they hit Croydon, trying to knock out our airfields and things. Then, next day was a clear day like this, blue sky. And they came over again, all flying in formation, bombers, Dorniers, Heinkels, with Messerschmitts above them, each plane giving its neighbour covering fire, as though they were on parade. And both Essex and Kent put up a barrage, and we broke the formations. This is what people don't know. We really hammered them, and there were some coming down. And finally, they started to break up. Then, when that happened, the order came through to cease fire, because the Spitfires wanted to go in. Then there were dogfights, and there were Spitfires coming down, as well as Messerschmitts and planes coming down. And on one occasion, I saw a Spitfire pilot bail out, and the Messerschmitt circled him and tried machine gunning him on the parachute. Now that really did upset people. Whether he ever reached the ground safely or not, we don't know. I often felt since that probably Farrakhan Command might have been a little bit too keen to get in too early, because they should have let the anti-aircraft go a little bit more. Because we did put up one hell of a barrage, you know, both sides of the estuary, Kent and Essex.
Can you describe what you were actually doing during that first or the second day when they came through and the barrage?
I was in the command post.
So
yeah.
What were you doing?
I was on the spotter scopes. Yeah.
Targeting one particular aircraft or a formation?
Well, trying to identify most of them. Really, because it was one mass of planes. And you couldn't really, we didn't have to target one single plane. We just targeted formations. Because when these shells burst, if a shell bursts within 50 foot of a plane, either it can do serious damage to a plane. Any closer than that, and it destroys the plane. They're pretty powerful.
And what kind of altitude were these?
Oh,
it's not that important, but I mean,
I can't really remember. It was fairly high.
So it was a very intense day. I mean, was it from daylight to dawn to dusk or?
No. Somebody,
hang on. Let me just.
I've got to come to the door.
No worries. I'll put it on pause. So it was a very sort of intensive day, but it wasn't the whole day. It was they came through in one wave.
Yeah. Because there were other waves that we didn't see, but the main one flew up the airstream.
And what kind of rapidity of fire would your battery be working at? Do you know how many? Can you any idea? Was it?
I think they were going hell for leather.
And what would that mean? 2 a minute, 3 a minute, or?
Well, they were firing in salvos of four shells, four guns. Each gun type consists of half a battery, which is four guns. The battery is eight guns. Whether it's anti-aircraft or field artillery, the battery is eight guns.
And you'd all fire simultaneously? One.
Yeah, you fire simultaneously, yeah.
And that would give the maximum effect in the air burst.
Yeah, that's the air burst. You try to get the shells to burst in a group. Yeah. Right, then, after all that, then the night raids started. The Germans found they were losing too many aircraft during the day.
And again, do you have any idea when this was?
This is where I'm having the problem.
Don't worry. We're probably in 41 still, are we?
Probably. 41, tender course of cookery. The third month of 41 to the 30th of the 4th, 1941, tender cookery course. Yeah, then I was cook after that, so I was no longer on the guns.
So this is pre-41 then?
Yeah. This was 41, I was a cook, yeah.
So we're then talking about the summer of 1940, presumably?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
That was the Battle of Britain summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You can't remember when, I'm shocked I can't remember when Dunkirk was. I always get it confused. This is really terrible. I have a crib sheet at home, which I should. I don't have it with me. Never mind. So we're talking, yeah, okay. So after that time, when the Germans started coming over en masse, you then went, what reaction did you get from, did you hear back that the guns had been effective, that they'd...
No, nobody said anything. But I've read since that the effect that it did have, it kept the bombers flying high. They couldn't aim accurately. It kept them up. Now, as our Air Force found when they flew over Germany, the German flak had the same effect. And as the Americans discovered, when they tried daylight bombing, they caught it. They're flying fortresses. So, the anti-aircraft was effective. I've also read since in a book that one of the effect that anti-aircraft had, first of all, the fire was controlled to keep it down as much as possible. And then people were getting alarmed, so the civilians were getting alarmed. So then they were told to fire, increase the rate of fire up. Now when people could hear the guns firing, they were happier. At one stage, we were moved from Canvey Island to... I've missed out quite a bit, I'm sure. I know, because at one stage from Canvey Island... yes. We were moved to Derby to protect the Rolls-Royce engine works. And you never saw anything like it in all your life. It was like a refugee column, commandeered a hotspot of civilian lorries and civilian drivers, drove all the way to Derby. I do remember there was an old Rolls Royce that had been converted into a breakdown vehicle with a winch on the back. Anyway, we're plonked in the middle of a field up there. And after that... we didn't stay there very long. After that, we went up to Scotland to a place called Drumcross, which is Bishopton outside Glasgow. There was a big explosive factory, underground factory. The only thing you could see was the nitro towers with the brown smoke coming out of them, brown fumes coming out of them. We were on a slight rise and we overlooked the Clyde. We overlooked the Singer Sewing Machine Works, and there were barrage balloons. And one nice sunny day, I looked up, there was a barrage balloon on fire. Oh, I haven't heard any aircraft. Then another one caught fire. There was some sort of electrical discharge, lightning. And then all the others were being burned down quick. Now, they don't explode. Although it's hydrogen, they don't explode, they just burn. I remember that, and then we were moved down to Helensburgh on the banks of the Clyde down there, covering Greenock and Gourock, where there's a big pool down there where all the big ships unload there. And
what was there action? Were there raids at the time?
There had been. But not whilst we were there. We always seemed to arrive at these places when it was finished. Then we were back down to the Isle of Sheppey. We had two sites, one on the island of Sheppey, another one near the bridge on the island, a place called Arwade. That was a brick-built site. one night... I was battery cook then, and one night we were The guns were in action. You didn't take any notice. The guns were firing, and they were only a few hundred yards away from you. You get used to it. We're unloading. Two of us were unloading, helping the driver of a ration lorry unload the rations. And we finished. And we were standing there talking beside his truck. And there was one God Almighty explosion. We looked up. Because just see the guns silhouetted against the sky, because they were slightly on higher ground. And one of the guns, the barrel was split and peeled back like a banana peel. Shell had exploded in the barrel. And stuff was flying all, I won't say what they called it, but the stuff was flying all over the place. You could hear it. And the driver said, "Bugger that for a lark, I'm off." Jumps up in his cab, starts his engine up, and drives off and leaves the road. Stops. We walk over and say, "What's up?" He's sitting up in his cab, spinning the steering wheel around, and nothing was happening. So we had a look. There was a hole through the side of his, where we'd been standing. Cut the steering column clean off. Shrapnel. Another man was running back down from the, coming back down from the gun pits on an errand. And a lump of shrapnel caught his great coat and ripped it open in front of him. Didn't touch him.
And this was a bomb that fell on a gun, or the gun?
No,
just,
no.
The gun just blew
up. No, a shell exploded in the barrel.
And was anyone hurt?
Nobody. Not as far as I know. Nobody said anything.
So now, so then you go back. What? And so that's the Isle of Sheppey. What happens after that? Then you're trained as a cook.
They made me a regimental cook.
With the same, you go back to your battalion or your battery.
Yeah, oh, not the battery, the regiment. RHQ. And we moved west, Corsham, was it near the between Bath and Bristol?
Yeah, no,
Corston. Yeah, we had a gun site there.
The village between Bath and Bristol.
Yeah. I was battery cook there for a while. And then I was posted to the RHQ, which was the drill hole in White Ladies Road.
Bristol.
And there, I had quite a good staff of ATS girls in the cookhouse, which made life a lot easier for me. Not only that, the regiment also had a very good dance band, London Dance Band. And every Saturday night, they used to throw the drill hole open and have a dance. They used to pack the place out. We had to increase the price of admission. Very popular it was.
Do you have any idea again when this is? Are we now 1941, do you think?
Probably 1942, I expect. 1942, somewhere around about there. My daughter had difficulty in deciphering the writing in the pay book.
Don't worry. So in 1942 then,
yeah.
So this is probably about the depths of the war, isn't it? I mean, it was just beginning to turn perhaps then.
It was after Bristol had been blitzed and Bath had been blitzed.
And did you go through any of those blitzes?
No, it had virtually finished when we
Arthur's
got there.
42 blitz, wasn't it?
Pardon?
Arthur's 42 blitz, wasn't it?
Like Plymouth was hit in April 42.
Yeah.
The firemen from Plymouth moved out from Plymouth, gave them a rest up to Bath, and they were bombed in Bath. The same day they came up from Plymouth to have a rest.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. That probably wasn't on the mic. I better say it. So Mrs. Dunn just said that it must have been just after the Plymouth blitz, which was in April 1942, because the Plymouth firemen were moved up to Bath for a rest, and then by chance Bath was blitzed while they were there.
We were then moved down to Plymouth or to Whitsands Bay, which is the other side of the water.
I know it Plymouth. Well.
Yeah, Whitsands Bay. The Whitsands Bay Hotel.
Know that very well too.
You do.
Still there.
Is it?
It's in Port Rinkle.
Well, yeah, Port Rinkle. We took it over from the Marines. Now, a lot of people won't like me saying this, But we had to scrub the place from top to bottom. And I was regimental cook. I went in the kitchens, and there were two Argus stoves. I knew about Argus, but I never met them before. And they were chock full of clinker and ash, and they were in a dreadful state. So I stripped them, took them all to pieces, cleaned them all out, and lit them up, got them working again. I went to bed. Next morning I got up, 5:30 to come. I had to get up pretty early. I was in a room on my own. I got an alarm clock. I wired it to the floor, because I was sleeping on the floor. At the top of a pencil on the winder, the alarm winder, on a piece of string on the electric light switch. So when the alarm went off, the light was switched on. I went down. I lifted the tops on the stove, on the Argus, and the tops were cherry red. Oh, golly. I looked in the ovens and they were cherry red. So the thermostats wanted resetting. Anyway, I laid the bacon out in baking trays and just flashed it in the oven so it was cooked just like that. And then I was working on my own in that kitchen, cooking for 79 personnel. And the officers had dinner at night. So I was getting up 5:30 in the morning and I was working until after 10:30 at night. And I stuck it for quite a while. I wasn't complaining. I was on my own. And one day, after breakfast, the RSM came in the kitchen with a complaint. The men had complained that I'd put all the bread crust out. I was getting fed up with them because they wouldn't eat the bread crust. Anyway, I don't know what I said, but I exploded. When I turned around, RSM had gone. Now, you don't do this to an RSM. I don't know if you want to know what an RSM is. He's God. I carried on working. In the afternoon, he came back in the cookhouse. He had a piece of paper in his hand. Here, he said, you got a 24-hour pass, now bugger off into Plymouth. I don't want to see you for 24 hours. And when you come back, the ATS girls will be in here helping you. And you'll have 2 afternoons a week off.
Well, that's what an unlikely reaction from an RSM. I was expecting you to say you were on a charge and you'd be...
Well, that's what I was expecting.
Sent to the Russian front.
Yeah, yeah. He was a good RSM. I mean, he saw immediately what was wrong. I didn't complain. To this day, I can't remember what I said.
I'm intrigued about... Because that Whitsands Bay is on the coast, very close to Plymouth. That's where the Germans flew over to bomb the dockyard just beyond the hill there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where were the batteries? Were they all along the top?
Yeah, yeah. Coal sands and all those places around there, yeah. Anyway, on my afternoons off, I went down on the beach, on the rocks. Well, the rocks were full of winkles. I used to take a sandbag down and half fill it with winkles. And I'd boil them up and put them in the mess. And the blokes used to get the housewives out at night and a glass of beer and pepper and salt and a bit of bread. They were quite happy with that. And then I was sent home on agricultural leave.
What is agricultural leave? Was that to help with the harvest?
Yeah, yeah.
And would that be in the summer of 42?
On one occasion, my father was ill. So I had to go home. There's one disadvantage for that. You don't go back to the same unit. You're sent to someone else. And on this occasion, I was sent, I think it's one of the places at Coal Sands I was sent to. And I found myself a supernumerary that nobody seemed to want me. Finally, I was interviewed by an officer. Did I want to join the catering corps? And I thought to myself, I've had enough. I've been caught before and I'm working on my own. Okay, you are your own boss and nobody bothers you. You'll have to get on with it. I thought, no. So, what did I do in Civvy Street? Farmer, sir. Did I drive a tractor? Yes. I was thinking of the old standard Fordson tractor on iron wheels, not a road tractor. Right, I'll send you to a tractor battery. I thought, well, this sounds interesting. So I went to the Third ACAC tractor battery, Eastern Avenue, Gloucester. And it was slap, rap, bang in the middle of RAF records. There were 3,000 WAFs working there. Very small unit. It had the battery office had been, a sign on it said the shirt and pyjama factory. It was a brute, small brick building. And I walked in the yard. There was these damn great vehicles. Matadors, they were called.
So I'm just going to say, Norman Dunn, Reel 3. Okay.
Now, I'd never driven a road vehicle.